previously on Corporate Homing, we're just going to use this episode to talk a little bit about where we've been.
If you're not uncomfortable to make a move, that's not the right move, right?
We just decided to turn down the Corporate Homing ire to a little bit of a simmer.
We've been gone, but we're going to come out strong.
On today's episode of Corporate Homing,
we have a guest in the building today, our favorite homie. We have our brother, D. Mark Liggins.
I'm the National Chief of Staff, CFO for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. It's the legacy civil rights organization founded by Dr. King in 1957.
One word to describe what it was like to grow up in the Liggins household, the word I would use is... What's up, homies?
Hey, homies.
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast.
Woo, woo. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
No, stop with the whooping. That's not your ministry.
I especially get to whoop because we have, there you go, I was about to say, because I know DeMarc is going to whoop.
So I know whoop I can. Coming on.
Still a whoop coming off. Well, as you guys can hear, we have a guest in the building today. It is indeed our favorite homie. We have our brother, our little brother, in the building today, D. Mark Liggins. Say what's up to everybody.
Hey, everybody. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for having me. I'm super excited to be here in the Corporate Homie building.
That's fine. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Happy, glad, and excited to have you on the show today. So, Mark, we always get lots of questions about you and certainly have gotten even more now that your sister has been named the president and CEO.
CEO,
right. And I feel like, you know, of the Tampa Bay Partnership, I feel like Bones Thugs and Harmony because I've been telling everybody. I'm going to tell everybody. Everybody, you thought that they elected me the way I've been telling everybody. But well, one of the things that
you're channeling your inner
everybody.
You're channeling your inner Carolina. You know she's the president of Tampa.
That's right. I put it on the church bulletin board. Right. Is Wanda doing the announcements? When can she tell everyone? Yes. Everybody.
Greenwood.
So one of the things that
with CME humor.
Indeed.
So one of the things that we get a lot from the homies is asking us about you. And certainly that has even increased more as Bemetra changed jobs and I changed jobs. So we've just been getting a lot in the DMs and emails like, hey, do you guys have siblings? And what do they do? And all of that stuff. Right. And so we're so glad you finally decided to join us on the show. And I guess I just would start with, tell us a little bit about your kind of corporate career journey.
Well, I just want to say also, obviously, just a quick second, Dimitri, big shout out for the announcement, both for you and for them. I think they're getting an asset, and I think you'll be amazing there.
Oh, thank you, brother.
But to answer your question and not take the mic privileges, what I do, I'm the National Chief of Staff and CFO for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. It's the legacy civil rights organization founded by Dr. King in 1957. Humbled to work in that space. So that's what I do for a living. That job has me doing a lot of stuff, from corporate partnerships and managing the staff and integrating different programs and the publisher of the magazine, et cetera. And my journey there was kind of strange. Actually, shout out to Bemetra. She told me about them when I was selling stocks. I was a stockbroker and I did that for about 4 or 5 years. I sold stocks and that's how I got over there and I worked with them with their finances to start with. And I was, Series 7 licensed broker coming out of a COVID private client group. At that time, I think I was working at a little shop up in North Atlanta. came down from going backwards. I got into being a stockbroker from being in banking. I was in banking for about 10 years, starting off as a commercial credit analyst and ultimately a branch manager for banks out of Montgomery, Alabama. So that's before that, you know, starting finance at Alabama State University. So that's my
backwards. You know, I'm feeling like the oddball now as you sit here and tell your story. I'm like, you and B were both bankers who have then gone into, well, I guess nonprofits, right? Yeah. Both of you. Yeah. So that's something I kind of never really thought about until just this moment.
Public private partnership type stuff. And, you know, as I used to tell people when DeMarc was still a practicing banker and I was a practicing banker, is that I give out money for a living. DeMarc manages the money, and then Demetra makes damn sure people pay it because she's a bankruptcy attorney.
So now, what's gonna be your stick?
I don't know. I've got
me and my brother going to heaven, and we don't get our sister in.
it's like when you were at the club in college. Like, we got one more. Come on.
I'm with them. Jesus, I'm with them. But I can't wait to hear what your new, because you're good at coming up with the little sticks. What you're gonna say about the three of us? I never knew that, but it is gonna be like, I'm going to have to figure out what I say. My brother and sister do positive work, very positive work.
And do you know?
Not that my work is not positive.
Yeah. And then I do think it's interesting that we all were business majors in college. All three of us were business majors in college. Marketing, finance.
See, that doesn't really surprise me because mom and dad, especially mom, so big on practical degrees. Right. Like, what you gonna do? What you gonna do with that? How you
you're
gonna
not
get a job?
You're not getting a sociology degree.
Yes. Right.
Everything had a pragmatic approach.
She was a risk manager to the max. Rich.
Yes. Do not take any risk was kind of the Carolyn Liggins motto. I love that. The risk manager to the max. So that actually doesn't surprise me. All of us are very pragmatic in how we approach things and how we get to things. And I think, you know, mom just being sort of the ultimate mama bear was trying to keep us from ever, you know, being in harm's way or making any kind of mistake or anything like that. And I wonder, it makes me think about mistakes that, you know, you ultimately end up making. So DeMarc and B, you know, and I'll share one too. What do you think were one of your biggest career mistakes? I mean, everybody knows successes, but what were one of your biggest career mistakes?
I can go first. My biggest career mistake was going to Mutual of Omaha Bank. You know, I went over there to become the state president for Florida, thought it would be an opportunity to expand my skill set leadership-wise and have an opportunity to build out the bank throughout the state. About, 60 days after I got there, they brought all the state presidents to Omaha and announced they were selling the bank. And and at that point you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't feel morally comfortable recruiting people to come over, you know, RMs, not knowing what was going to happen with the bank, what was going to happen with you know, our presence in Florida. And then I realized that I just didn't ask good questions in the interview process. It never dawned on me to ask if the bank was being sold. I mean, I asked about like long-term strategy for Florida, but you know, ultimately that did not end up being one of my better, you know, moves. Yeah.
Do you feel like they would have told you if you had said, are you in any discussions about merger opportunities? So they said, why, yes, we are. We're currently discussing.
Well, you're laughing, but once we entered into an LOI, we had candidates sign NDAs and we let them know that before we brought them over. And so for me, I'm like, why could we have not done that with me? Why could we not have had a non-disclosure agreement? And then I felt like I could have made a decision that was in good faith.
So when you were interviewing for your next jobs, did you say, by any chance, are we being sold? Are we being shut down? Are we being, like,
so, I don't think United Way was in danger of being sold or shut down. You know, so it's a little bit different. But I'm saying we're being kind of tongue in cheek, but I do think that there's value in saying, like, what is your vision for this market? Do you have a long-term strategy? What's the, and if you're going to a smaller organization, like, because you haven't seen the financials, you know, what is the survivability, or asking to see the I don't know, but I feel like I did not ask enough good questions to get that.
That's funny, because I did do that when I was looking for my last opportunity. You know, I just changed jobs too, and because I was, you know, at a firm that was thinking about being acquired, it did make me think about different things to ask, and I did ask for financials, like, you know, like, can I see, you know, not just the profit per partner that you're putting in the media, but like, you know, are you over budget? Are you under budget? And I spent about an hour with the managing partner, you know, who the chief, like, runs all the operations, going through a lot of my very detailed questions that probably only a bankruptcy lawyer could have. You know, it's funny you say that, but it was the experience of being a part or being in the mix of an organization that was thinking about being bought to even make me think about those questions. I wouldn't have ever thought about that.
A great question is, there anything that's going to impact the culture of the company? Because a lot of times people are getting acquired, but they may be bringing in like a new set of consultants. Like when we were in banking, coming out of Colonial into when I was at SouthTrust and they were getting acquired by Wachovia, that deep changed the culture of SouthTrust, where we went from very much being what we would have called traditional bankers into sales-oriented bankers. And I do think that's a really good question. Is there something on the horizon that's going to change the culture? Do you think about people who work at MailChimp now, they're about to work for QuickBooks? That's going to be different because the people who run it, what they care about, is going to be different. And it is an important question to ask. Is there something that's going to be changing the culture? But I would think the biggest mistake I made probably wasn't in the interview process. When I switched over from Wachovia Bank to Wachovia Client Group on the private side, I took too many assumptions from one side of the company to the next. They're different entities. And so I got into selling stocks in right about 2007. I got my Series 7 in June of 2007. For anyone who keeps up with the markets, you know, I was right on the beginning of a downward spiral for the market.
That's cool.
Bad timing.
I had a confidence because I had asked the bank when they asked me to come over there. They were like, oh, well, if something goes wrong, you can just come back. Right. This is what the private side told me. And then when everything
coming back
collapsed,
for the homies going back to the retail side of the bank. Correct.
Correct. Correct. Coming off the private client side, going back into managing banks. And when the collapse happened, it was clearly obvious to the bank side when I told them that, they're like, that can't happen. And I didn't ask that question. I listened to someone who was trying to talk me into taking a promotion, and I just didn't take the time to research that thing. And candidly, something you and B talk about a lot in terms of mistake. And if I had talked to more people who were inside the company, experienced, moving inside of divisions, they probably would have gave me much better advice, except for me trying to take my experience, which was very limited, and trying to know more than I knew. It would have been a lot easier for someone to point me in that direction. So I would say probably the biggest mistake was just not reading what I need to read, and to be candid, not asking mentors, not asking people internally, externally to the question, hey, this is what I perceive to be about to happen. Is that true?
You know, what's interesting, Mark, is both of our mistakes are surrounding big sweeping change within organizations. You know, mergers are moving from one division of the bank to another division or a whole subsidiary, and asking good questions about what that means. So I think that's fascinating.
I think my biggest mistake is not in connection with a merger, but feeling sometimes about being a little bit too self-conscious about being a woman or being the person of color and assuming that somebody has an issue with that. So I had a case once, and it was kind of a lot of good old boys. You know, I practice in Texas, so that's a lot of my cases. And I just assumed that I was going to have to work really hard to really demonstrate my proficiency and to show them that I knew what I was talking about. And it just kind of made me have a little bit of chip on my shoulder that I didn't need, you know. And when the case was over, the client was like, she's really good, but she's just real defensive. And I just realized that sometimes I go in assuming that people have issues with things that I didn't need to assume. Just start with good intentions and assume good intentions about people until they do something to make you think that they don't have good intentions.
That's, I love that. I think we've all been guilty of that, particularly being minorities and people of color and women. But, you know, and history has taught us not to always assume positive intent, right? But I do think it's good advice that don't feed into that. Like, until you've been in a situation, then perhaps assuming positive intent is a better way to go. So that, like you said, you won't come across as like, you know, having a chip on your shoulder or what have you. And so, again, in your example, Demetra, which was great, is they're like, she's a good lawyer, but like they didn't enjoy working with you per se, you know?
Right. And that's the thing. You want people to leave and not just be like, you know, sort of like, do you want to be right or do you want to be good? But you also want people to have a good experience. And it never crossed my mind that I could be the one to sort of, you know, to sort of do that because I was, you know, feeling self-conscious in my own, getting in my own way, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's a fine line to walk, because that can also be like what also propels you forward. You know, the things that you're worried about do lead you to be incredibly prepared, because you know you become aware of like people's perception. So you do want to make sure that you're not so happy that you forget those things. Because to be Misha's point, in that particular moment at work, you know, when they didn't necessarily have that. But we all know that there are other experiences where you could have walked in just being your good version and not your great version, and that story could have been totally different. So just trying to find the balance of that.
Yeah, but I think that there, you can mm-hmm. do both. You can be your great version because you know that like maybe they don't expect you to be as prepared or be as competent or whatever without bringing that energy into the way that it gets delivered. You know, I think that's what I took from what
right, like, oh, you don't think I'm great when this is over.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, that's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't have to be like that. Like, just come in and be great and always be great and kind of, you know, strive for excellence and in everything you do, but you don't have to have a attitude about the fact that you're striving for excellence.
Yeah, that's a great point. Kind of, you know, there's so many things that you wish you knew earlier in your career. Demetra, what's the one thing you wish you had known when you were a baby lawyer or rookie lawyer?
There are a lot of things I wish I knew when I was a rookie lawyer, but the one thing that is in the same vein as sort of biggest mistakes is that you're not perfect. You're not perfect. And this idea sometimes when we are minorities and women of color, we often think to ourselves or are told, you got to be better than everybody. You got to be, and you have to, you know, do more and work harder and be twice as good, which I'm not saying that I disagree with, because I actually do agree with that. It's just that you start to actually think that you can be perfect and that you can actually achieve perfection. And that is untenable. Like, you can't, and unachievable, which can oftentimes make you feel less than. So then when you have a typo in your document, you're like, I'm going to get fired. When you, like, I just spent a lot of time just trying to be perfect. And when I fell short of being perfect, then feeling like a failure, which didn't give me a lot of confidence as I moved to the next thing. And, it makes me just wish that I understood that perfection is something that you strive for, sort of understanding that it's unattainable. And I still struggle with that some today. Like, I just always want to think I can be, you know, the perfect wife, the perfect sister, the perfect daughter, the perfect friend, the perfect. And then when someone says something that reminds me that I'm not perfect, I get my whole feelings hurt. You know what I mean? Which is just silly, because you're an actual human being who will make mistakes. And I just wish I knew when I was younger, how to grace myself a little bit more.
Things I wish I knew when I was younger, I wish I had taken more time to understand the vastness of the industry that I was interested in. I really, you know, kind of knew I was a finance major. You kind of know about banks and so on and so forth, but you just don't deep dive into like the entirety of this industry. But there are people who both, you know, work on the stock floor. They're analysts. It's just so big. You know, it's just so big. They get from CFOs. I mean, it's just every industry is so big. And just looking at the variety of types of jobs that are available from a younger age, I think it's probably something I would have done, just differently, and not laser beam on I want to do this in this industry without even understanding and exploring just how big that industry is and mm-hmm. the related industries around it.
I think that's a fantastic point. And, you know, I always talk about, you know, when we were growing up, obviously we went to public schools, and I feel like they brought the same. And the reason why I bring this up is because we did not go to public school in one place. Like, we grew up in mm-hmm. multiple states, yet everyone had the same 7 careers at career day, regardless of what state we lived in, right? And it was incredibly generic, right? You got civil servants such as, you know, police officer, firefighter. You typically got somebody of the clergy. You also got a lawyer. I feel like they didn't even tell you what type of law they practice. You just got mm-hmm. a lawyer, you know. And I don't ever remember seeing what I would call interest, different types of careers. Like, to your point, DeMarc, if you did get someone in finance, you got a branch manager at a bank. You didn't get, you know, a stockbroker. You didn't get commercial banker. You didn't get a specialty finance person. You didn't get a bond trader. And so I think not doing the research on the industry, I think that was just an exposure issue, right? You know, especially and particularly for us being military kids, we weren't even exposed to other private sector careers because we were in military environments. But I'd love to hear what you guys think about that.
No, I think that's right. And I think, you know, one of the biggest things that I struggle with now, DeMarc, as I'm managing and helping other young lawyers is giving them to understand, you have to understand the industry. Like, if we're doing oil and gas, you need to really get an understanding of oil and gas. And if you're getting, you know, we're doing retail and sort of all of that. And I think it is, Dimitra, to your point, like, we're not always just exposed. I've thought a lot about lately, and I don't know, DeMarc, you know, especially with you having kids, how much people ask kids, you know, at 5 and 6 years old, what do they want to be when they grow up? Which I feel like now that I'm grown is so limiting because of what Dimitra is saying. Like, why are you being asked to pick a job at 5 years old when you have no idea what people do for a living or what's even actually available to you? And then maybe you get sort of down a path, sort of saying you want to be something without even understanding what all is available to you, or like that you could make a living doing something besides business. You could make a living being a makeup artist. You could make a living being an artist. You could make a living being, you know, I don't know. It's a million things that people make a living doing now, but we just ask kids, right? Like, I'm not even sure if you could ask a high schooler what they really want to be when they grow up, because they don't know enough to even answer the question. They don't have enough life experience to have to even tell you that. And especially the more limited your environment is, how in the world would you know what you want to be?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, even if you experience it, that's from the consumer side, right? And there's such a big difference consuming something and working in that industry. It's why, you know,
amen to that.
You know, how many people think they want to go do a thing and go do the thing to figure out?
Yeah, like,
out,
I thought.
I feel like that's a third of the attorneys.
Like, I thought I wanted to do sports and entertainment law because I was like, oh, I played sports. I went to college on a sports scholarship. And so I really want to be a sports and entertainment law until I really got to law school and realized that that was contracts and transactions.
And you're like, that's not my ministry.
I didn't want to do that. But it's sort of like you said, DeMarc, I was experiencing it from the consumer side. Like, I like sports. I want to be a lawyer. Combine them. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, this is the industry. And just not even knowing, you know, what I wanted to do. Let's talk a little bit about our growing up and what it was like to be Liggins bred and grow up all things Liggins. I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit when we talked about, you know, mama being a pragmatist, but like, if I had to use one word to describe one word to describe what it was like to grow up in the Liggins household, the word I would use is excellence.
That's my word.
Even to your point earlier about finding that grace to know that you're flawed, I suppose, you know, we were just in an environment with high achieving people who had high achieving expectations. And by and large, we were achieving those expectations. So there was never this really point internally where we start to feel like that wasn't correct. So definitely excellence is a thing that is probably the best word if I had to pick a single one.
Yeah, because I think about it like this, like we had to be up and dressed by 10 o'clock. We had to make good grades. We did not get, you know, people got paid to make good grades and, you know, you got like a dollar in their report card, you know, mom and daddy were like, that's your job. What are you talking about? Like you, ain't nobody giving you no, you're supposed to make an A if you can make an A, you know what I mean? Like, and it was really a great way, to me to find a way to be excellent in the little things and in the big things, which I think has served me incredibly well as an adult.
I also think all of those, you know, rules and excellence, the way I see it now as an adult, created structure. And structure is what helps you be successful, right? So I think one of the reasons why so many people struggle for consistency at work is they don't have structure. So yes, it is to a degree extreme to say you need to be up, showered, and dressed by 10 a.m. But I know people as adults that can't get things going because they sleep till 11 o'clock every Saturday and Sunday. And then by the time they get up, as daddy would say, lollygag, eat something. Right. It's 1 o'clock. And his mama would say, the day is gone. It's 1 o'clock. The day is gone. Because, you know, she going to bed at 7 o'clock. So the day is gone for her. You know? Right. So I think all of that created structure. DeMarc, you said something that was really powerful that I've never thought about. I don't think we realized that it was so much excellence because we kept meeting the expectations. So it wasn't like they were setting these high bars that we weren't meeting. So then you're like, this is just the way it is. Like, Demetri, you're going to make A's and you're going to be a superb athlete and you're going to be on the homecoming court and you're going to sing in the choir and you're going to be in the band and you're going to do that at school and at church while you walk your dog, pay your tithes. You know, you did all of, and like,
all of those things are true.
But those things, I didn't name
it. And none of that. What's so funny is you named a bunch of stuff and all of that was the regular in the Liggins household. Like you didn't say anything right. That was like a hyperbole or like a stretch. That like all life. That was life.
So when that I was an adult and I met people and they did nothing but go to work and then talked about how tired they were all the time, I would think, what are you tired from? You haven't done anything.
You ain't done nothing.
I would think people who were not high energy were lazy because that's what mama taught us.
Right. And I would say, I probably still think, I don't want to say they're lazy per se, but I do think that, you know, excellence is a habit, right?
And so too is I like that. Excellence is a habit.
As you see people who are high achieving,
like
they're excellent because they bring that energy to everything. Like they don't, and that's why you end up thinking, it's not that they're lazy, but it does mean that they're capping their own potential. Like if you don't bring excellent energy and intent to everything you do, you can't continue to be shocked when you're not getting results back. You can't do excellent things if you don't bring excellence.
So that's so funny. That makes me think of my favorite piece of advice that Dad always gave us that I used just 2 weeks ago talking about an associate is successful people learn to do things well that they don't like.
That they don't like to do.
Daddy used to say, like, everybody does things well that they like, right? That's easy to do. But it's not easy to do the things that you don't like. And it's sort of what you're saying, DeMarc, about excellence is a habit. So you bring excellence to folding clothes, which I hate, right? So you bring excellence to, you know, doing fee statements, which I hate. But you have to bring excellence to the things you like and the things you don't like.
No, I think that's such a great point, because it is easy, and we all do it. You tend to want to do the things you like first because it's easier. And because of that advice from Daddy, I try to do the things I don't like first. So it's a treat to get to do the things I do like later, even at my job. I will piggyback on that and say, you know, one of the things Daddy told me that sticks with me, which it's in the same vein, is he used to tell me everybody wants to start in November, Bimitra. The people who get to start.
He sure did. He used to say that. You want to start on the off season.
Right. The people who get to start are shooting jumpers and running miles in July. And there's no glory in shooting jumpers and running miles in July. There's no fans. Nobody's looking at you. There's your name's not going to be in the paper. Nobody's keeping score.
And especially when we were coming up, you couldn't post it on social media.
There's no social media.
Like now people are like, now they shout themselves out, getting it in on the off seasons. Champions made it. We didn't have that. You just had to be by yourself. Nobody to say, I see you, or I shout you out alone and work.
And it's like that now as an adult, right? You're in the office, you know, underwriting or working on a case at 10 o'clock at night or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, or you've been in the office 3 straight days past 7 p.m. and miss putting your kids to bed, or you're at a dinner with somebody who's going to materialize that you're not really enjoying, but for something that's going to materialize 8 months or maybe a year down the line. So there's not this instant gratification. And that's the biggest piece of advice I got from Daddy. It's like all of that grinding, there's no glory in that, but it pays off later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was at the dad, he was always full of isms, right?
Correct.
But one of the things
we can spend a whole show on him.
Wow. Oh yeah, that is like a docuseries, right?
It's so true though.
But dad used to always say, you know, son, who told you that life was fair? It really wouldn't matter what you were going through. He would always look at you with this, who told you that was fair?
And incredulous. And
and I think that it feeds to everything else we're talking about, right? That when you do have to grind hard, it does cause you to think, I've got to be able to impress this situation even when it's not fair. That you don't kind of walk into everything with this expectation that somebody's going to bottle up and package and give it to me. It doesn't matter if it's fair. If that's what you want, you got to go get it, because sometimes people give it to you, but most times they don't.
Go get your blessing. Go get it.
You got to go get it. And so for me, that's something I hold a lot. Life is not fair. A lot of things that I think could have happened a little bit easier, but it really doesn't matter what I think, right? If I want to go get it, you got to go get it, because life is not fair. And nobody told me it was.
We could spend another docuseries on mama's advice as well.
But two-part series coming.
I was going to say.
A two-part series, exactly.
But I will
say. Two seasons. Season one is season two is Carolyn.
And I would say, season one, when you're feeling good about yourself. Season two, when you want some tough love.
Ooh, that's so right. Yeah. That's the
But I would say, one of the things that mama, you know, always said to me growing up, that I, when I'm having, especially my down days, or Dimitri, like you were saying earlier at work, feeling like people are going to think less than me because of whatever, is, baby, you can do anything you put your mind to. And I just, that's so powerful to tell a child, and then more importantly, for a child to embrace it. And then lastly, for them to see it manifest, right? And so I wish every kid could get that. You can do anything that you put your mind to. There's nothing that is off limits for you. You have the talents, the brains to do it. You can do anything you put your mind to.
You know, and it's so funny because I remember that piece of advice too. I always connected that to, you know, and guard your heart, because the scripture, guard your heart because everything flows from it, and have been much more intentional as an adult about being careful about what I pour into my spirit, because it starts changing what I put my mind to, right? Because everything starts in your mind first. So whether you think you can or think you can't, right, you're right. So like you said, you got to be thinking you can do things. So you need to be pouring good things in your spirit, good things into your heart. Don't consume a bunch of trash all the time and then think you're going to go out into the world and feel good. If you, you know, watch reality TV where people are always fighting, you're going to always be ready to pop off at somebody. Right. If you, right. You know what I mean? So like, get your mind right, renew your mind.
Mom used to always say, happiness is a do-it-yourself
project. Do-it-yourself. That's what I was going to say, DeMar. Happiness is a do-it-yourself project.
And what, you know, once you get girded in that, and one of the things that Mom was great about is making sure is you didn't derive your sense of self off of other people. One thing that we were not allowed to do was, and we were all popular people, relatively speaking, right? But right. None of us derive our value per se, right? Just the world, being cool.
Because it's almost like people not thinking about you like that.
So that was going to be, I was going to say, y'all keep taking my other mama words. I was going to say, since you took happiness as a do-it-yourself project, that I was going to take the one that she said, where people don't like you like that. So this idea, and we have this come up a lot with the homies, you know, people will say like, oh, you know, I was at work and these people were asking me what I did this weekend. And we're always like, look, people don't like you like that. People are not thinking. That's one thing Mom really impressed upon us, and I'm so grateful, is it that over-exaggerated sense of self, right? I don't think that people, even if they're talking about me, I understand it's for 5 minutes. People are not at their dinner table worried about what Demetri Williams is doing, what I'm doing, what I'm wearing, where I'm going. And so people kill me with that now with like, I move in silence because the haters. And you're like, why do you think you have so many, like, why do you think people really care where you moving? Like, you date somebody.
You think they're concerned with your life.
Right.
And we can't be consumed with our life because we're too consumed with what our own.
Demetri, I find that to be fascinating. And you know, you and I talk about this all the time, where somebody will say to me, you know, like, and I was worried about, you know, they were talking about me, and I think to myself, like, okay, that person is married, they have children, they have a career. The person that you say that they're talking to is, you know, a CEO. You know, they're leading an organization, they're married with children, and you think that they're spending their free time
talking about you.
Like, come on.
The arrogance of it.
It's ridiculous. So, but I do think that, love that. And then DeMar, like you were saying about happiness being a do-it-yourself project. And I think what I take from that is happiness in every aspect of your life. If you're unhappy with your job, get you a new job. You're unhappy with the city that you live in, get you a new city. You think your friends are all talking about you? Don't spend every year purging your Facebook list. Get new friends so that you don't have to purge your Facebook list at the end of the new year. You think the people at your church, they're ridiculous? Join the other CME church. Join the other AME church. And so, like,
or get out the denomination altogether.
Right. Yeah. Right. But again, it's that idea that, like, everything's not about you, and take control of your life and, like, you know, go in a slightly different direction.
So, DeMarc, I'm curious, you know, we've been talking about mom and dad, and I think about the way we grew up, and it was so much fun. Our house was just full. And I don't know how you guys remember it. Y'all can tell me if I'm romanticizing it. I just remember just a very happy house. Music playing, lots of laughter, lots of people making fun of each other, which I do think also helped us being able to take criticism, because you cannot be criticized more than you can be criticized in our home.
You're going to get checked.
Yes. But just also just a lot of love and happiness, but strict, right? Strict and excellence and all of it. Like, we just, it was, did not play. Curious as to how you implement that in your own home with your own kids, or if you are like in a different direction. But I'm curious as to what you think and what kind of how you took that and implement that in your own home.
I love the way we grew up. I don't think you're romanticizing it at all. Obviously, the toy is not on this call, but as far as I'm concerned, I'll do my best to emulate as much of our home as I can do. In terms of just trying to find that balance, loving with structure, fun, you know, and then you guys have been around me with all the kids, right? So we talk about, you know, faith, focus, finish, and frequency a lot. Those are the things you got to pour into your stuff.
Faith, focus, and frequency. Okay, that's a DeMarcism. Okay,
yeah. Faith, you know, DeMarcus is bad on swear words.
So,
I love it.
No, yes, but you got to bring faith in everything that you do. You got to focus on your important tasks. You got to be able to do those important tasks and duplicate them over and over again. You can't just do it once. And you got to finish, right? That it's really easy to start something and then throw it away. That you got to learn how to get something going and actually see it to completion. But I think those are the types of things that kind of come from that home we grew up in. I do my best to. I try, I'm probably a little overdo it. I know you guys think I'm a bit of a hover dad.
I think we all objectively agree. That's not just a thought.
That's just a fact. Yeah, that's not me and Demetrius.
And that's coming from people who were raised by Benny Liggins. Like, correct. It's not, yeah, like we're, yeah, the like woo free falling aunties. Oh, yeah, no. Like,
right.
I think it's interesting too, because like I love the way that we grew up, and I feel like if I were to change anything, it would be like changing a little bit of salt on an amazing dish, like nothing significant, right? Like, and Demetria, you're right. It was a lot of love, a lot of laughter. I love the way that Mama made food a part of that love. It made you feel special. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you had a big test, she was going to make a good meal for you that morning so that you could, you know, and she would say, go get your A, go do your best. Cause you know, if something special happened for you at school, you're going to come home and even though it's five of us in the house, your favorite meal was going to be made. I mean, she still does that. You know, mm-hmm. I was at home in March by myself and taking a nap and woke up to fried chicken being made. And I said, is she making smothered chicken? And all of a sudden I felt like a 10-year-old and excited and happy again. And then having all of that wrapped up into God and faith, I just don't think that, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a fantastic way to grow up.
Yep. Definitely love that. DeMarc, thank you so much for joining us. I do want to give you an opportunity to, you know, you probably know what's better than anybody else. Is there anything you want to tell the homies, you know, while you're on the episode, get to share with the homies, like, about us with respect to some of the stuff we talked about, or even on the other episodes? I just want to make sure we don't leave without you getting to say your final piece to the homies.
Final piece to the homies. You're in the right place. You're listening to the right people. You need to make sure that you got to. And I remember y'all started this, right? And I would tell people, I'm saying, look, I know they're my sisters, but let's be real. Like, I'm an objective person. If this podcast was garbage, I would be like, it's my sister. But I mean, give my life.
You don't need to listen.
Right? But no, I genuinely, with everything that makes me DeMarc Liggins, think that because of you guys, what you're getting from the podcast is who they are. Demetria and Bemetria are every bit as driven and visionary, and hustle-minded, giving, altruistic. That's who they are. This is not a contrived or curated experience. You're getting to be friends with two of the best women on this planet.
Brother, trying to make a son cry.
Keep it going. Keep it getting big. If you're listening, or as you're listening, you know, make sure you don't. And for people who've been listening, don't forget you've had new people in your life that probably may not know that you've been experiencing this. You got new people in your companies. Make sure they're logging in the following. Don't sit on a blessing for yourself, right? Make sure you keep sharing.
Thanks again, DeMarc. We really appreciate it. And to the homies, thanks for continuing to hustle with us. We're delighted to be back. More new episodes coming. And until next time,
hustle hard, homies.
All of you, get you a twin. Get you another homie.